Well, hello, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to episode 453 of Sustainable Minimalists. This is a listener-supported show all about minimalism, eco-friendly living, conscious consumerism, and more. My goal is to create content that's so good, so unique, so different from all the other content that's being thrown at you that you genuinely want to support this work so that it may continue. That's my goal. And on today's show, we're discussing modernity, modern life. I've had a lot of ideas swirling in my head for the past few months about the ways in which modernity has been built on the back of fossil fuels. And there's a paradox there, right? The paradox, of course, being that our modern way of life is fueled by fossil fuels, and yet it's the burning of those fossil fuels that are causing our greatest existential threat in the form of global warming and climate change. And so on this show, we are in the business of confronting topics we perhaps have never considered before. Today's show is indeed one of those shows. It's hard to overstate the impact of these remains of living organisms, also known as fossil fuels, on our lives. If you are in your home right now, just take a minute and look around. I am betting here and now that every single item you're looking at with your pretty eyes was created in part thanks to fossil fuels. If fossil fuels wasn't part of the creation of what you're looking at, they likely were. Maybe the item is plastic and it's literally made of fossil fuels, or perhaps you're looking at an item, it's made of natural materials. Fossil fuels are very likely what powered the machinery to create the item. If not that, then at the very least, fossil fuels was responsible for shipping the item to your local store. Your car ran on fossil fuels, very likely to drive to the store to pick up the item. You might even be wearing fossil fuels right now in the form of synthetic fibers, polyester, nylon, or another. What about the food you ate for lunch? Was it wrapped in plastic? Plastic is derived from fossil fuels. Fossil fuels heat our homes, move our cars and our airplanes, power our economy. And within the confines of today's topic, fossil fuels still in 2024 largely powers our electrical grid, provides our electricity. Now, I say all that to say that modernity has been built on the back of the fossil fuels industry. And perhaps you could make the argument. I am not making this argument, but somebody perhaps could make the argument that at least initially in the decades immediately following the Industrial Revolution, at least in those decades, fossil fuels were the best thing that ever happened to humans, precisely because the rise of fossil fuel use led to increased life expectancy, rising incomes, better access to clean drinking water. I could go on and on. But again, let's not forget the paradox. The paradox is what has been swirling around in my head for months. These fossil fuels have, yes, propelled us into modernity, and yet at the same time, they also are simultaneously threatening our way of life, our modern way of life, especially with regard to the increasing prevalence and intensity of natural disasters and other weather-related storms. So I'm going to say that another way. Fossil fuels power our modern lives, and yet fossil fuels are also powering global warming and climate change. I believe, and I'm going to make the point today, I'm going to try to prove it today, but I believe that we have become ultra-reliant on the very thing that's destroying our planet and perhaps is in the process of eradicating our species. Ted Koppel, so legendary journalist and news anchor Ted Koppel, in his book Lights Out, wrote, quote, "Electricity is what keeps our society tethered to modern times," end quote. Our entire way of life, and yes, it's true, our entire way of life depends on fossil fuels. It is a cold, dark, scary world without them. I'm reminded of a game I had when I was a child in the 80s, and perhaps if you're a child of the 80s, you remember it. I believe this game is still being sold, but the game was called Topple. Blast from the past, right? Topple was a plastic tray that balanced precariously on top of a thin plastic stick, and players took turns moving pieces on top of the tray. You would earn points by stacking pieces up high and completing rows, but if you stack the pieces too high or too much on one side, everything would eventually topple down. And so, yes, this game reminds me of modern life, right? Fossil fuels are the base of the toy. Electricity is the thin plastic stick, and electricity, aka the thin plastic stick, holds up that precariously balancing tray. The tray, of course, is our 21st century lifestyle. Our way of life balances precariously atop the stick. It depends solely on electricity. And guess what? At any point, it could all come crashing down. So let's talk about electricity, because I'm about to make the argument, and get ready for it, everybody. Get ready for the argument. I'm about to make the argument that we have become so unbelievably reliant on electricity, which at the moment, let's not forget, is majority powered by fossil fuels. We're so reliant on electricity that we are incapacitated without it. We're vulnerable. Yes. And yes, the grid is slowly, and I do mean slowly, getting cleaner. We've talked about this on the show. But what is the electrical grid exactly? The grid. We hear about the grid all the time, but what is it? Here in the United States, it's not one singular grid. It's actually three power grids that generate and distribute electricity through all 50 states. Computerized systems keep electricity flowing through the grids, and these computerized systems are designed to maintain a perfect balance between supply and demand. And guess what? Ted Koppel in his book, I've linked to it in the show notes, but Ted Koppel makes the point so clear that the grid, or the three grids together, they're not adequately defended, they are delicate, and they are oh so very fragile. Now, let's talk about that transition to renewable energy. Renewable energy, hopefully sooner rather than later, will power the grid. And so our electricity is not coming from the burning of fossil fuels. The electricity's power is coming from renewable energy, solar, wind, hydro, and others. The transition to renewable energy is a must. It must happen. It will happen. In a perfect world, the world would seamlessly transition to renewables. And you and I, we would give up nothing. Our way of life, modernity, we would go on as it's been going, right? For better or for worse. The only difference with the transition to renewables is that no fossil fuels would be in the picture. That is the perfect world scenario. And I think for those of you who have been paying attention, you already know we are not living in a perfect scenario world. The transition to renewables has been bumpy at best. It's slow. We're seeing opposition to renewables, and not just from the predictable fossil fuels industry and pro-fossil fuels lobbying groups, right? We're also seeing opposition from everyday citizens who have their own unique reasons. Perhaps they don't want a wind farm in their backyard or in their community. Perhaps they think solar panels are ugly. I hear this from listeners sometimes. So this is just one example of opposition. But another reason that the transition to renewables is going slower than we need is due to the fact that there's a backlog in connecting clean energy projects to the grid. The grid is essentially a transmission system that moves power across long distances towards cities, and then local distribution brings powers to homes and businesses. But delays have emerged as new projects ask to get connected to the grid. New projects must apply to get connected, and they have to go through a process to get accepted that's filled with red tape. The project must first be assessed with regard to impacts to the grid. How's it going to affect the grid as a whole? Will the project provide reliable power? More and more assessments have to be done before this renewable project, before this hypothetical renewable project can get connected to the grid. And so let's bring sustainability into this conversation for a minute. Is this way of living, in which our way of life precariously sits atop a delicate electrical grid? Is that sustainable? The answer, of course, is no, because still in 2024, the majority of our electricity comes from the burning of coal and other fossil fuels. Our way of life, or to say that another way, our dependence on electricity for survival, as of this moment, is not sustainable. Now, talk to me in 10, 20 years when the grid is majority, fingers crossed, majority fueled by renewables. It may be sustainable. My answer might change there. But as of right this moment in time, it's not sustainable. Energy transition to renewable sources, that's not a choice. It's not a matter of whether we transition or not. There's no if involved. We have to transition. The question is if we will transition quick enough and seamlessly enough to stave off the worst effects of global warming and climate change, and also to not see any impact in our modern, cushy way of life. So have you ever really thought about how much you, me, we depend on electricity? You've probably experienced a power outage in the past, and it likely wasn't a big deal because you knew it was going to be short-lived. The electric company perhaps was working outside your house on the lines. You knew you just had to wait it out, maybe an hour, maybe 5 hours, maybe overnight at most, right? Some of us, if the outage is short enough, we find reprieve in being unplugged. It can be very peaceful when the power is out. But after a couple hours, after a day, it starts to get old, doesn't it? You start to get anxious, perhaps. The kids start to bounce off the walls. You start wondering when is the power going to be turned back on and life going to go back to normal? I want to take a minute here to hypothetically imagine what it would be like if electricity went down for an extended amount of time. It's impossible to predict, right? It's impossible to predict what life would look like without power. But let's imagine that we're in an extended power outage for maybe about, let's just say, 2 to 4 weeks. Okay, that's a long time. I'm calling this a hypothetical situation. Keyword hypothetical. I'm not trying to induce panic. I'm not trying to get you scared and run away. I'm trying to convey with real examples how deeply embedded fossil fuels by means of electricity are within our modern world. And so this is all hypothetical from my perspective, but I must say there are millions of people around the world, by some estimates, 20 million people, that believe that none of what we're going to talk about coming up next is hypothetical. 20-ish million people around the world believe it is inevitable. Again, millions of people are preparing for an extended power outage, whether the grid goes down because of a natural disaster or a cyber attack or a solar flare. I had no idea what a solar flare was, so I had to look it up. A solar flare is an intense burst of radiation coming from the release of magnetic energy associated with sunspots. Okay, I read you the definition. I'll be honest. I still don't know what a solar flare is, but the grid might go down because of a solar flare. Who knows? The why behind the grid going down is not particularly important within the confines of this conversation today, but the what is what matters. So what would hypothetically happen if the power went out for 2 weeks to 1 month? And by the way, before we get into it, I just want to say, if you want an education, go lurk in some preppers forums. Holy moly. I have only recently, within the last 6 to 8 months, found Reddit. Reddit is amazing, by the way. It is the best social media site. People generally are kind. People generally are real. Reddit is the place for me. But anyway, I've found myself in a couple preppers subreddits, and holy moly, did I get an education. All right, so let's go through this hypothetical situation. What do people much smarter than me say life will look like without power for an extended period of time? Well, number one, no access to outside tap water. The water that comes to your tap is cleaned and pumped with the help of electricity. So no electricity means your water supply will become dirty and eventually non-existent. You won't be able to flush your toilet when the water runs out. You won't be able to shower. And if you're thinking to yourself, I have a well, I'll be fine. Your well needs electricity to run your pump. the pump is what supplies water to your home, so you're not out of the woods either. Next up, no electricity in your home, obviously, right? You're in the dark. You will not be able to charge your phone, your laptop, your tablet. You won't be able to use the washing machine. No TV to distract your mind. No refrigeration to keep your food cold. No freezer to keep your food frozen, to preserve food. You can't turn on your heater to get warm. You can't turn on your air conditioning to get cool. In an extended power outage, you would have little or perhaps even no access to food, right? McDonald's doesn't have power. The grocery store doesn't have power. That means their cash registers aren't working. Restaurants won't be able to operate without their grills and other kitchen equipment. So what food you have in your home is what you'll be eating. What food you can grow yourself is what you'll be eating. Speaking of McDonald's and grocery stores and 7-Elevens and everything in between, there would likely be little access to commerce. Stores everywhere will be forced to shut down. Like, the economy by means of commerce will no longer function, right? Cash registers don't work. So going to the store to pick up what you need likely won't be an option. Let's talk about communication. Most modern communication systems rely on electricity. Your cell phone, until it runs out of charge, might be able to still pick up a signal, but eventually it will go dead. Cordless phones won't work without electricity. Maybe your landline will. And your laptop, it might be able to connect to Skype or instant messaging or your favorite social media site for a bit. But that all depends on where the grid failure occurred and if the servers are up and running, so don't count on it. Now, I'm sure some of you are thinking, well, it's fine because there's plenty of really courageous helpers out there that will help us. But let's not forget that everything relies on computers, and without electricity, computers are useless. Calling for help in an emergency might not be an option. Again, Ted Koppel, in his book Lights Out, he makes the point that there are emergency preparedness plans in place for natural disasters like hurricanes, like heat waves, like ice storms. There are plans for power outages that last a few days. Yes, there are plans. The powers that be have plans for that. But there's no plan in place for highly populated areas without electricity for months or weeks. I'm going to say that again. There's no plan. Nobody has a plan for what happens when highly populated areas, think like a New York City, for example. What would happen to New York City if New York City doesn't have electricity for weeks? There is no plan. Let's go back in time and think about some natural disasters. Hurricane Katrina, right? There were reports in the week of Hurricane Katrina that as many as 200 members of the New Orleans Police Department were under investigation for deserting their posts. Let's talk about the Red Cross. The Red Cross is the largest non-governmental relief organization in the United States. In late 2014, maybe you remember the controversy, ProPublica, together with NPR, published its findings with the conclusion that the Red Cross is more concerned with bolstering its public image and raising funds than actually mitigating disaster relief. Following Hurricane Isaac in 2012, ProPublica found that Red Cross supervisors ordered dozens of trucks that usually delivered aid to be driven around nearly empty just so they would be seen. And now, what about FEMA? FEMAS is an acronym. It stands for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, right? Are you saying, oh, if there's a natural disaster, FEMA will help me? Well, anybody who watched the news coming out of Louisiana following Hurricane Katrina knows that FEMA failed. And I must say, Katrina was in 2005. FEMA is a much stronger organization now than it was almost 20 years ago, 19 years ago. And that is good news. But let's move on. You're going to have little or no access to transportation. Whatever gas you have in your car at the moment, that's what you've got. Gas pumps need electricity to run. And even though, yes, collectively, gas stations do have millions of gallons of fuel in underground tanks, gas stations without generators will not be able to pump that gas into cars or containers or anything else. So without gas, you'll be stranded. Same with city buses and trucks, government vehicles, cop cars, ambulances. And subways and rail systems, too, they rely on electricity and would likely be incapacitated. Finally, one more thought here. Bank systems, they may indeed go offline. You will not be able to run to an ATM and get cash from your account. ATMs will not work. Banks will be closed. But, and of course, too, if we're really extrapolating here, money is not going to mean much if the power grid completely collapses. Commerce is at a standstill. Nobody's going to the store to get a nice new summer dress. Now, if this hypothetical situation actually were to happen, I do envision the ultra rich trying their darndest to buy their way out of the problem. I am reminded of an article I read in The New Yorker back in 2017. I linked to it in the show notes because it is a must read. Must read. The article details wealthy survivalists who have stocked up on all the things. They've stocked up on gas masks, bunkers, locations that are safe from the effects of climate change. One person that was interviewed in this article details how he keeps a helicopter gassed up at all times. It's always at the ready at a moment's notice to fly to his underground bunker with an air filtration system in a secret location. There's also a lot of mentioning in the article of stockpiling guns and other weapons, stockpiling gold coins, because again, paper money, is that going to mean anything? I don't know, but gold might be barterable, like able to be bartered, right? So read the article. It's good. That's what the ultra rich is likely doing. And many ultra rich people, according to this article, are already planning for it. They're not just thinking about it. They've planned for it. They're ready. But what about the rest of us? I'm not ultra rich. Heck, I'm nowhere near rich. If I was born 100 years ago, I likely would have the skills and the knowledge necessary to weather an extended power outage, right? My grandparents and my great-grandparents, they understood self-sufficiency because they lived it. A global depression was sandwiched in between two major world wars. They knew the importance of being self-sufficient. They fostered age-old skills just in case. And yet you and I, we're a generation, two generations, perhaps for my younger listeners, my Generation Yers, perhaps you're three generations removed from crisis. That means that we are heavily dependent on products made by fossil fuels and systems powered by fossil fuels to make our lives easier. So we have got a lack of perspective because we're far removed from disaster. That's coupled with a reliance on convenience, which is also hindered by the fact that we have not collectively fostered these age-old self-sufficient skills. What does that mean? Plus, plus, plus equals vulnerability. We're one thing and one thing only. We're vulnerable. So we're going to take our quick ad break, and then I have some personal thoughts. And the personal thoughts are where my mind has been for the last, I don't know, six-ish months. If you are a supporter and subscriber of the show, just keep listening. Easy breezy listening. It's continuing on. If you're not a subscriber, I'll see you after our sponsor break. And we're back. On today's show, we're discussing some thoughts that I've been trying to make sense of in my head with regard to modern life and modernity. Modernity is built off the backs of fossil fuels, and yet it's the burning of fossil fuels that's threatening the future of our planet, threatening the future of our species. What a paradox. Before the break, we discussed the ways in which modern life would come to a standstill in the hypothetical event of an extended power outage. Now we're on to the part of today's show in which I'm giving my thoughts. And these thoughts are largely centered around not just the ways in which fossil fuels powers, literally powers our modern life. These thoughts are more about the ways in which fossil fuels have changed our outlook, brought us towards late-stage capitalism, and more. And so the first point that I want to make clear is that in the hypothetical event that our electric grid went down for 2 weeks to a month or longer, we certainly wouldn't be minimalists anymore, would we? Minimalism leaves us vulnerable. we would be maximalists, wouldn't we? We wouldn't be amassing stuff that contributes to status or prestige. No, of course not. But we would be amassing stuff that has usefulness for survival. Back in 2019, I aired an interview with homesteader Kelly Morris all about why self-sufficiency matters. And for me, that was one of those aha interviews. That was, what, 4 years ago now? And I still think about my conversation with Kelly. Kelly, if you're listening, hello. Kelly brought up points in our discussion that I frankly had never considered before. Canning our vegetables, for example, that's not some cutesy activity to videotape, make a reel out of, and put on Instagram. No, that's not why we can. We can our produce because knowing how to preserve food is an essential life skill in the event of an emergency, right? Being a maximalist when it comes to stocking your home with everything you need in the event of a big fat emergency, like the electric grid going down, that's not futile. That's smart. I remember Kelly saying in our interview under her bed, she keeps her cans. She keeps cans under her bed. And I said, but don't cans belong in the kitchen? And she said, no, cans belong wherever I have room for them. I thought to myself, oh my goodness, you're a maximalist. Yeah. And perhaps maybe all of us minimalists listening could consider being maximalists if maximalism can help us keep around the stuff that we need, like food, like water. We'll talk about that in a minute. I'm almost tempted to make the argument that minimalism as a lifestyle, and I love minimalism, don't get me wrong, minimalism has helped me in so many ways, but I think I'm making the argument that minimalism may indeed be late stage capitalism personified. We are so privileged, we are so out of touch that we can give away for free or, God forbid, throw out perfectly decent stuff. Yowzer, that is not so thanks to fossil fuels. If there was a natural disaster that outed the electrical grid for 2 weeks, suddenly everything would become valuable. Everything would have a purpose and a reuse. Everything would be necessary to keep around. So that's one thought. Let's move on to another. In modern life, right, in 2024, and perhaps not all of you or us as a community listening, I'm not talking to us, I'm preaching to the choir here, but in general, we Americans, we are wasteful, right? We create an awful lot of trash and we don't think about it. But guess what? In the event of an extended power outage, we would, each of us, every single one of us, we would suddenly become very cautious about creating trash. Because guess what? Trash smells, and no one's coming to get those bags from your curb. Recycling would take on a whole new meaning again, right? Recycling wouldn't just be this afterthought we do to maybe feel good about ourselves. Recycling, becoming more circular, would become essential. You'd want to do your best to limit the trash you produce. You would be reusing containers, and tin cans would be used to heat water over a stove. Kitchen waste, including paper, cardboard, that would all be composted because remember, if you're growing your own food, you need healthy soil, enter compost. You would be spending so much thought, effort, energy, time, reducing the amount of trash you produce, which, by the way, also happens to be a sustainable behavior. Another thought, in the event of an extended outage, I am willing to bet you would no longer care about money, about status, about prestige, perhaps even about your looks. We would go back to basics. Instead of worrying about the new wrinkle that just popped up between my eyebrows, I'd likely be thinking about acquiring water and purifying it so that I can survive, right? Instead of stressing about whether I have enough money to take my family trip to, I don't know, pick a place, Disney, this summer, I would likely be wondering whether the berries grown in that back corner of my yard are edible. We would still have problems. Our problems would be vastly different. We would have vastly different problems. And this brings me to an important point. We human beings, we Homo sapiens, we are wired to find problems and stress over them. Always, no matter what the situation, no matter whether we're living in our cushy, first world, post-industrial era world, or whether the power goes out and we're thrust back into darkness, the Dark Ages, perhaps, if you want to go there for a nice little pun. But whether we have electricity to solve our survival woes or not, that's not the point. Fossil fuels have propelled us into a world in which all our immediate needs are taken care of. And yet, find me a person without problems, without stresses. We always have problems and we always will. What will change is simply the nature of the problem. So keep that in mind the next time you find yourself stressing. We all have problems and we always will have problems no matter what. Human beings are wired to find the problem, to find the negative. Another thought, if the power went out for 2 weeks or longer, hypothetically, we would be working hard. Oh, yes, we would, but we would be working differently. We wouldn't be sitting in front of a computer because our computer would have died long ago, right? We'd be chopping wood. We'd be collecting rainwater. We'd be gardening. We'd be preserving produce. And speaking of working differently, using our hands, getting out of our seat, turning away from screens, research does find that working with our hands improves brain function. And that's because when we use our hands on a task that is not cognitively demanding, doing so gives the mind a chance to relax. And so when our brains are offline, it gives us a chance to work on problems behind the scenes. It's not uncommon for people to have breakthrough ideas while mindlessly working on something with their hands. There's something really primal about working productively with our hands. And many people say it's also profoundly pleasurable to work with your hands, right? Homo sapiens are meant to be active. We have been actively using our hands as part of our daily lives for thousands of years. But with the advent of computers and other technologies, many of us move through our days with minimal physical effort. We get far less physical activity. You know it to be true. The obesity epidemic, in part, is due to the fact that we're all sitting all day long in front of a screen. And so some research does find that using our hands may actually be key to maintaining a healthy mood, to improving our well-being, whereas inactivity may contribute to irritability and apathy and, yes, depression. Activity, moving our bodies, using our hands, may be the antidote. And so I don't want to give the impression that 2 weeks to a month without power would be easy, because it wouldn't. It would be hard work. But perhaps the work may be more rewarding as opposed to sitting on your computer and responding to emails and going to Zoom meetings. I don't know, but maybe. Another thought, I do anticipate us collectively as a society having trouble being unplugged, at least initially, right? Sitting here in my closet in the basement with lights on me, I feel an urge to say, oh, but it would be so nice and peaceful to have the power go out. Oh, it would be back to simpler times, right? But even deep down, I know that's not true. We have been raised with a constant stream of noise all around us at all times. Stimuli from bright flashing lights, televisions, computers, gaming systems, iPods, iPads, all of it, okay? And so we've become accustomed to constantly be plugged in. And so I do anticipate a major withdrawal for my family and perhaps yours too if the power went out for a long time. We have to learn how to cope with being unplugged, and that will take a transition period. Similarly, our relationships with others would definitely change, for better or for worse. Again, Ted Koppel, another quote. Ted Koppel writes, quote, "The tissue of emails, texts, and phone calls that hold our social networks together will tear within days." Yes, they will tear within days. Isn't it crazy to think about the ways in which fossil fuels have facilitated our tissue paper-like social networks? And yeah, I must say, the most cynical preppers I've encountered online do attest that there'll be major interpersonal conflicts if the power was out for a long time. Lack of resources, lack of governmental control means major problems, major interpersonal problems. However, the opposite might also be true, right? Instead of these fragile tissue paper-like connections that we have via technology, perhaps there will be more connection without a fossil fuel powered life, right? Perhaps we'll get to know our neighbors in a deeper and more meaningful way. Perhaps we'll understand them in a deeper and more meaningful way. Perhaps we'll barter a little bit more. Perhaps we'll rely on each other more in times of need. I don't know. That's me being optimistic. But just one more thought here. I do believe that if the power was to go out for a long amount of time, if fossil fuels were suddenly no longer powering our way of life, the way that we acquire information would change. The information we're looking for would definitely change. First of all, get yourself a battery-powered or crank radio just in case if you don't have one. Just do it. Just and thank me later. Just do it. But the information that you're going to consume will be different too. Like, who cares what celebrities are doing if the power's out for 2 weeks? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Who cares what's happening with those reality stars, or who cares about that basketball game? Nobody cares, right? You won't be watching the news cycle on TV at night. You won't be getting fired up about news that doesn't immediately impact your life. And so the way we get information these days and the ways in which we get fired up about information is also heavily reliant on fossil fuels. That is our show today. I told you we were going to talk about something different. I told you I was going to give you some content that you're not getting anywhere else. And I so hope that I created some content today that was so unique, so thought-provoking that you would like to support the show financially. Because again, remember, your support of this show ensures that this work continues. We will be back tomorrow for headlines. Headlines, by the way, are your need-to-know environmental-leaning news stories in 15-ish minutes. If you like this show, if you receive benefit, please leave it a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you so much. And of course, if you really like this show, please consider supporting it with $5 a month. I appreciate you. Thank you. And I'll see you tomorrow.